Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. You do have the engagement hour, and I am the host, Ted Maxwell, and Matt Neely's behind the glass, not only spinning the tunes, but also keeping us on time and on target. The purpose of the engagement hour is to encourage everybody to get involved. And remember, we are a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country and our community. And my guest today is one of those who is taking those requirements literally, and he is serving both our country and our community as the congressman representing Congressional District 6 in Arizona. And Congressman Sisqmani, I'm glad to have you on the radio with me today.
Thank you, Ted. Really appreciate being on.
Well, Congressman, I'm going to jump right into it. You've been on the show before, and we've talked about what brought you to service, and that was a lot family and upbringing oriented, and you've served in so many different functions from, chambers of commerce to serving on Governor Ducey's staff, and now you're serving as the elected official yourself. And it's really kind of nice. They've given you this big fall break, you know, during this recess. And I say that kind of, you know, tongue in cheek. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of share with us what this break from being back in D.C. has been like for you at this time of upcoming election.
Well, listen, thanks a lot again for being on. I'm not going to be one to correct the host on anything here, but I'll tell you one thing. It's anything but a recess, my friend. It's we call it a work period. We're at home and we're going everywhere. I've been in Duncan just late last week. I was in Safford yesterday, so back over on that neck of the woods of the district. You got to remember, the district goes from basically Casa Grande all the way east to New Mexico. So it's got five counties: Pinal, Graham, Greenlee, Cochise, and Pima. So we're all over the place. The break that we are getting is being in the middle school hallways of Congress, kind of thing, with what's happening there. But we're back home, back to reality. That's what I like to call it. Back to reality, back to people that are just living lives in terms of dropping kids off at school, going to work. And these are the people that we need to be talking to. It's always nice to come back home. I always say that coming back home keeps me connected, keeps me informed, and it keeps me married as well. So these are all great things, but I got to tell you, dropping kids off at school like I've done this whole time, and I'm back at coaching flag football again for the fall sports. So all these things are good for the soul, but they're also good for my job in the sense of learning and listening and seeing where people are at. And also going to all these different sites that were, I know we'll talk about this and we'll touch on it, but all the resources that we're bringing back, I've been visiting all those sites all across the district. So it's always good to be back for all those reasons.
Well, absolutely. I'm sure your family is very grateful to have you back. I love the fact that you're still doing school drop-off on top of it. And I hope you're making the kids run during flag football practice. But
Oh, you know we are. Nothing beats conditioning. That's one of the things I don't miss about playing sports, the conditioning piece. I always tell them that. I said, this is one thing I don't miss, guys. You know?
I am sure all the movement around the state, you're staying in shape and conditioned. So we talked about CD6 and how large it is. It's got five different counties: Cochise, Graham, Greeley, Pima, and Pinal. And you've been visiting all parts of the district over the last couple of weeks. What have you been hearing from people? What are top of mind for them coming into this election cycle?
Yeah, that's a great question, because what I do when I sit down with groups, and I did this with a group of veterans in Safford yesterday, and I did it with also the ag community, and I've done it with different, actually a broad network of different leaders, and from agriculture to farming to mining over in the Duncan area up in Greenlee, a very strong mining area of the state there. And I go and I take out my pen, piece of paper, and I just ask questions. It's my speaking is brief in the sense of I'm here to listen, I'm here to learn, I'm here to answer any questions anybody has, but I want to know what's on your mind. And people, I'm not sure they always expect that. So it takes a little bit for them to warm up. But once they get going, boy, I mean, it just opens up the floodgates of feedback and their thoughts and their appreciation of us being there, especially in Duncan. When I walked in the restaurant and I said hi to people, they everyone told me that we've never met a member of Congress that had visited this area, and they've been there for generations. So I walked down a particular street that we're going to help repave, and no street has been worked on, repaired, or built in Duncan in 45 years. And we were able to get funding, what I call it is federal dollars returned to our state to get invested into these local communities. So there, I'm hearing a lot of appreciation for the focus that we have on results, on just being effective and staying away from all the noise and all the social media wars that are going on that people love to tweet about, or especially from when we are in that bubble of Washington, and just staying focused on results. I'm also hearing on the issues. Obviously, people are hurting. They say, well, people tell me that, you know, the news or the administration tries to tell me that inflation is at a certain rate and that the economy is better, but they're like, but we don't feel it. Things are more expensive and we can afford less things today than we could 2-3 years ago. So it's clear what they're feeling. The border continues to be an issue. So again, veterans also, they have a lot to say, and that's one group that you don't have to poke a lot for them to really express what they feel, and that's the way I like it. I had a meeting with them yesterday, and I said, I want you to be very straight up with me. What's the good, the bad, and the ugly of what you're going through right now? So I took a lot of notes. I had my team with me. I have people from Washington come down every week that I'm here. My team from Washington comes down as well, one person a week, so that they can also get a sense of the people that we work for. So that's what the work period is all about.
And Congressman Ciscomani, you serve on two very critical committees back in D.C., and you kind of alluded to some of the folks you're reaching out to. You serve on Appropriations and Veterans Affairs. And can you talk a little bit about the impact of serving on those, what I, as a veteran myself, consider critical committees back in D.C., especially Appropriations? People don't quite understand the importance of that.
Absolutely. I'll start with the Veteran Affairs Committee. This, we have over 70,000 veterans in our district. This is very unique in terms of all the other congressional districts in the country. We're number 9 in terms of the population of veterans in our district, so top 10 in the country for veterans. So I have a big focus on this. Anything from the disability claims and how long that's taking, their overall services at the VA, the preparedness for them to be able to hit the workforce after retiring or separating from the military, and what that looks like when they're still in active duty, so we can help prepare them. And obviously, we have very tragic issues with mental health, with veteran suicide, with homelessness, all the things that I know that you've been working on as well, especially in this community. So we have the issues that we have with veterans are broad, and they're very unique as well. So we actually have in my office at least one person, and we're hiring another one, that their sole focus is to work on veteran issues. And not just on the policy side. I have that person in Washington, but I mean for constituent services. So if we have veterans listening now, call the office. We have Mel in the office she's a veteran herself, married to an active duty military person in the Air Force, and she is she's solely focused on this. This is what she does. She takes care of our constituent services for our veterans. So a specific hotline for them. And in terms of what we've been able to do in that, the results, almost $1.5 million returned to our veterans from just the bureaucracy and the red tape of their benefits that have been stopped in the federal government, either through Medicare or through VA insurance services or the medical services, or overall just in other agencies, the IRS even, in different areas. We take care of our veterans, and we've done this for everyone. Obviously, overall, we've done over 3.3 million returns to our constituents, but for our veterans alone, almost 1.5. So this is what we do for our veterans. It's the policy side, but it's also taking care of their needs specifically now that we advocate for them on an individual basis as well, not just on the broad policy sense. So very proud of the work that we do there. And I have a veterans council that you are very gracious to lend us the SAOC office to have the meetings there. We just had one last week. I get together with the 20 veterans on the council, ranging from retired generals all the way to, you know, Marines that separated after 4 or 5 years. and very different perspective from all of them. And we get together and I listen again. I learn what's on the ground and what are the needs of our veterans. The mission of the council is very simple. It's making our veterans' lives better. And we all know the mission of that. So that's in the Veteran Affairs Committee.
No, absolutely. It's Arizona is a state that has not only a lot of military bases and a lot of serving airmen, soldiers and sailors and Marines, but it also has a large retirement community of veterans that move here for the quality of life in Arizona. And I know your Veterans Affairs Council is a very diverse organization that represents them all. So, Congressman, I'm going to cut to a break here real quick. When we come back, we may talk a little bit about APROPS, but I want to make sure we get into a little of the challenges of running for re-election in CD6. So that's Congressman Juan Ciscomandi, representing Arizona's Congressional District 6. And I'm Ted Maxwell. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And we'll see you when we come back. Welcome back, Tucson. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour. I'm Ted Maxwell. My guest today, this morning, for the first half hour, is Congressman Juan Ciscomandi, who represents CD6. Congressman, I just want to really quick, you talked about the ability for people to reach out and contact your office for help. And that's something I think we forget, that our elected officials don't just represent us, but they also help us. And I just wanted to plug ciscomandi.house.gov. If you go there, you can read more about the committees and caucuses, but you can also find the services that his offices are able to help you with. So, Congressman, appropriations. It's probably one of the oldest committees in Congress. It's got significant influence over the shape and context of the budget in every year. And you are the, as I understand, you are the only freshman-led Congress member on that committee. Can you talk a little bit about the role and the importance of that committee and what it allows you to do to help Arizona and our district?
Sure. So thanks for that. Yeah, the Appropriations Committee is a very important committee. There are 4-8 committees, what they call in Congress. This is one of them, probably the like you mentioned, the oldest one and the one with the most influence over our discretionary spending, which this is another whole conversation, but that portion keeps getting reduced and reduced every year.
Yeah, we don't want to talk that one today. Sorry, we don't want to talk that one today.
So on the actual where the money is spent, the discretionary side, which is what funds defense, what funds our veterans, what funds Homeland Security, what funds the function of the federal government, basically, that's where we sit. Now, there's a lot of waste in that. I mean, immediately it's obvious for everyone sitting there, especially business owners or people that balance their checkbooks at home. This is something that we can see. So the number one priority is to make sure that we continue to cut back on the wasteful spending of the federal government. And there's plenty to do there. Washington is addicted to spending overall, whether you're on the left or the right. I'll tell you what, the debt has increased under both sides' leadership. And that's something that is the top priority, to make sure that the money is being well spent and there's accountability on that. And then along with that is to make sure that the federal dollars that our constituents send over to Washington are returned to our district to work for us. I always say there's enough wasteful spending in Washington for us to not be able to target back these projects back into our district. Right now, I'm on my way in a few minutes. I'll be at Oro Valley to meet with the mayor, Mayor Winfield, and his team there to talk about over $7 million that we're helping secure to bring back and make sure that we finish up those bridges that are under a lot of need in Oro Valley. You're talking about new vehicles for the police department in Tucson. You're talking about new radios for the police department in Sahuarita, a new 3D crime scene camera that we had for Marana last cycle as well, a JTED building for our JTED students, roads, a hospital in Wilcox, the road that I mentioned in Duncan, not to mention the multiple water irrigation projects all across the district, in Pinal County specifically. Teacher housing in Pinal County so they can have more success in attracting teachers in regions like it is for Pinal, while supporting our hardworking teachers as well. So these are all projects that have qualified, and after a long vetting process, we can bring them back to the district and put them to work for our constituents. So I've done a big focus on that. We secured $26 million in our first year, $34 million back to the district in our second year, so a total of $60 million coming back to our district in our first term in office. I've focused on that, and being in the Appropriations Committee gives me a seat at the table to be able to do that. So it's a big advantage for us to be there, again, one for fiscal responsibility and also to bring resources back home.
Yes, Congressman, that's a great point. It's one of those ones, if you're not at the table, you might be on the menu. So it's good to have you at the table there representing us. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I want to give you an opportunity. We've talked about how the enormity of size, five different counties that CD6 covers. But it's a tough district to run in, and so I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your case to the voters of CD6. Remember, it's 36% Republican, 31% Democrat, and 32% other. So while there's a 25,000 vote difference between the number of registered Republicans and Democrats, there's also 166,000 other voters, independents and others. What's the difference that you make that you want folks to vote for you, and what's the difference between you and your opponent, Kirsten Engel?
Well, listen, this district, more than a difficult district, I would call it a competitive district, and that's what it is. It's a district that, as you mentioned, covers all three areas of interest, let's say Republicans, Democrats, and independents. And when I look at this district, I see it as a competitive one, and that's why the race was closed last time, and we're working hard knowing that it's always going to be within those margins because of the registration that we see in the district. What separates me mainly from my opponent is the results. When you look at the effectiveness and the results that we've had versus the ones that she has had, let's not forget that she was an elected official in this area for a number of years and not a lot to show for that. Also, the willingness to be working with everyone. I mentioned I'm going to go meet with Mayor Winfield right now, a Democrat. A couple of weeks ago for the water project in Tucson, I met with Mayor Regina Romero. Obviously, Ed Honey, a Republican, and then Tom Murphy, a Republican also in Sahuarita. It's working with people across the aisle to bring results back, to make sure that that Southern Arizona wins and our entire district wins. It's not just Southern Arizona anymore. So it's about effectiveness. I was ranked the top 10% most effective members in Congress in terms of passing legislation in this environment. And my legislation was around veterans, was around natural resources, and was around the border as well. Working across the aisle to get this done. Because at the end of the day, when I talk to people, and Republicans, independents, and Democrats as well, what they want to see is results. Is my life better off? Can I afford things? Do we have better jobs for our kids that are growing up here and they can stay? These are the things that matter to our community at the end of the day. Law enforcement. And my opponent has been clear on this. I mean, on the record, saying that she doesn't believe that there's an immigration crisis. That we can't have someone in denial like that. Or defunding the police. You're never going to catch me anything in that area. We have to support police, law enforcement, first responders, which is why every police organization out there that has endorsed us. My campaign has endorsed me for this effort because I've worked with them. So at the end of the day, it's results. It's what have we done, not only what we say, but actually what we have done. And I stand strong on the record that I have the last 2 years. And that's why I'm running in an optimistic way. It is going to be a battle. There's no question about that. And we're working hard to continue to earn people's support. And I go everywhere. That's why there's no room that I haven't been in. I went to the Sahuarita food bank as well. They run an amazing operation there. I went to the diaper bank. Now, talking to them was funny because I tell them, I can change these diapers with my eyes closed, you know. So I felt right at home in that diaper bank. You know, I changed diapers for 12 years straight. So I became an expert at that. So I know the need that they have and the need they fill in the community. So it's really going to every place that we represent and meeting with everyone, even if we disagree. I'm a Republican, no question about that. I have my values. I've been living them and voting accordingly. That doesn't mean that we don't meet with people that don't think like us, and we actually find common ground to benefit our community. That's what people want from their government. They don't want this, you know, are you a Twitter warrior? How many followers do you have? How many slingers can you throw out there? That doesn't make anybody's lives any better. What does, though, is actually showing results and working for the people when we listen to them.
So we've got about 1 minute, Congressman. I want to give you a chance. What are your goals and objectives, or the big ones, when you get reelected and return to Congress? What do you see the next things you're hearing that you know the community and the district want to get done?
We have to keep on focusing on the border. And when I talk about the border, it's a security piece, Ted, but you and I have also talked about promoting the trade and commerce that goes through our border. I'm an immigrant myself, so I have a lot of interest on the immigration process as well. So border for me is overall an important issue, security, trade, and the immigration system as well. Obviously continue to invest in our veterans and the cost of living, the economy. We have to continue to reduce on the government spending and the wasteful spending that they have. Those are the top three priorities as soon as I get back to Washington.
And Congressman Juan Ciscomani, representative of Congressional District 6, thank you for all you do for our community. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow at the State of the District, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be back after the bottom of the hour. Good morning, and welcome back to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's playing the tunes and keeping us moving forward. Had a great opening interview with Congressman Juan Ciscomani, and I want to thank Jim Click Automotives for being a supporter of the Engagement Hour. There are currently nearly 2,000 vehicles in inventory at Mr. Click's 11 different locations, or 11 different dealerships in three different locations. You can find a Chrysler, a Jeep, a Kia, a Hyundai, a Dodge, a Ram, a Ford, Nissan, Mazda, Lincoln, anything you desire, you can find out there. And Jim Click Automotive and his team will take good care of you. So I appreciate his support for our show. I'd like to welcome right now Jaime Molera. He's been on the show with me before. He's one of the founders of Molera Alvarez and one of our key insights to what's truly going on in the political situation inside of Arizona. So Jaime, I'm pleased to have you join me via phone today.
Good morning, Ted. It's great to be on.
So I don't know if you had a chance to listen to anything that Congressman Ciscomani said, but we're going to shift to Arizona issues now. What I'd like to hear from you, because we've sort of touched it in conversation between just the two of us, but I'd like you to kind of share, what are your post-primary thoughts? What surprised you, and what kind of impact do you think that the primary results statewide are going to have on the state legislature?
Well, the biggest one, I think, happened down in Pima County with the primary victory of Vince Leach. I think that the Democrats were very excited about running against Justine Watzak. I think they felt they had a candidate that would be successful and they could raise a lot of money against her. She had been somewhat controversial, as we all know, on a number of issues and some of the things that she did as far as speeding tickets and all that kind of stuff. But Vince's victory, I think, has emboldened the Republicans to believing that that they can retain the Senate. I think 3 months ago, a lot of folks, a lot of pundits were thinking that there's a good possibility for the Democrats to flip the Senate. I don't think they believe that they have as good a chance in the House of Representatives, but certainly the Senate is in play. But now with Vince's victory, I think a lot of folks are thinking that the high watermark for the Democrats might be just a 15-15 tie in the Senate. So I think it's really changed the dynamics of what might happen with the state legislature.
So interesting enough, in the primary came out of it, there's already been six of the 30 seats that we already know who the Senate representative is going to be, because there is no primary. But what districts would you say are the ones? You mentioned LD-17. Can you kind of give the listeners down here in southern Arizona kind of a feeling for what other districts are those critical districts that will help determine the final balance of power in the Senate?
Well, there's two districts. Well, actually, there were three districts in play. And certainly, we talked about Vince Leach, 17. Shauna Bullock is the other seat that the Democrats are eyeing, and they think that they have a good opportunity to take her seat. She's running against Judy Schweibert, who's a current state representative. So the Democrats, I think, feel that Shauna Bullock, who's also married to Clint Bullock, who's on the Arizona Supreme Court, who's been targeted by a lot of the more progressive groups trying to get him voted out. You know, his in Arizona, we have an ability to vote out members of the judiciary. And so that District 2 race is going to be a big one. And I think that's going to be where most of the Democrat resources are going to go, again, in order to try and get that Senate at least tied. The other big race is going to be in District 13 up in the Chandler area. And by the way, Bullock is North Phoenix anthem. District 13, that's the current senator's J.D. Mesnard. That's a very tight district, and I think the Democrats feel that they have a good opportunity there. However, Mesnard over the years has proven to be a very strong candidate. He runs good campaign. He's a very tenacious campaigner. So I think a lot of folks, including myself, believe he should be able to pull it out again. So I think that the big battle is going to be in District 2 with between Schriebert and Bullock.
And so you alluded to the fact that that'd be where a lot of the resources are spent. Can you talk a little bit about the amount of money that you believe both is going to be spent internal to the state, so from state funding sources, but maybe more importantly, how much money is going to be coming from outside of Arizona to try to influence our election results?
Well, I was talking to a woman who's a general manager of one of the major stations up here in the Phoenix metropolitan area. And they were just giddy because the amount of money that's coming in nationally with the presidential race. You know, Arizona is a battleground state. We have a big U.S. Senate race between Kerry Lake and Ruben Gallego. So we're going to see upwards of over $500 million, some folks are thinking, that's going to come in for airtime across Arizona. And that tends to filter down even into the state legislative races. And so you're seeing that the Democrats, national groups are really targeting those districts. And the reason they're targeting those districts, Ted, is not so much just to get their particular party candidate to win, but it also helps them get out the vote because every vote is going to be critical for the presidential race. As we've seen, it's incredibly tight. So, I mean, it might come down to a few thousand votes. So getting those people out, especially when there's big races in those legislative districts, tends to amplify the money that's going to get spent. So I foresee this is probably going to be a record-setting year in Arizona for the amount of dollars that are coming in for campaign purposes.
Yeah, there's no doubt if you want to get airtime, you better have it booked already because it's going to become really, really short in supply soon.
That's absolutely right.
We talked a little bit about the state house, and there's just one that I think I've found interesting, and that's in LD 15. Michael Way won one of the two positions. It's a pretty heavy Republican district. He won one of the two Republican opportunities with one of the incumbents to compete in the primary. And in that district, the Democratic Party is single-shotting their candidate. So, you know, what that means to those who don't understand, they just put a single person forward trying to win one of two seats available. But apparently, Mr. Way's run into some potential problems with voter registration. I believe the article I read at least, and you may know more about it, is he voted in the 2021 and 2022 election cycles in North Carolina, which makes it very hard for him to meet the 3-year obligation of being a resident here in Arizona. Can you tell us what you do know about that situation?
I believe it's 6-year obligation. You have to be here 6 years before you could run for the state legislature. But it makes it difficult for him to make a strong case that he can stay. So right now I know that's being challenged. I think there's a lot of pressure on him right now because of those reasons from the Republican Party to step down. If he were to do so in the next week or so, I'm not sure, Ted, exactly when that deadline is. But if he were to step down now, then the Republican Party and the Legislative District 15 Republicans can appoint another person to run as a Republican. That would be on the ticket with Neil Carter, who's also the incumbent representative. But let's say he doesn't, and he might, try and challenge it and try and fight it. The Republicans, I think, would still be in a good position to retain that seat. It's such a heavily skewed Republican district that even if they were to do a write-in candidate, which would probably be their what they would have to do, and that's happened before in Arizona and in various legislative districts. And I've seen where you might have a Democrat or a Republican running, but when you have such a big majority advantage, as the Republicans do in this case, even a write-in candidate, I think, would probably be successful. in that race.
Well, I believe that district, like you said, is very heavily skewed, as are many of our districts in the state of Arizona, one way or the other. And I think the challenge would remain if his name stays on the ballot. So many people walk in and just vote. And as I understand it, if his name's on the ballot, he can collect votes, but it essentially is totally disregarded if he's been determined to be ineligible to run. Part of the reason I think you're talking about the push. So before we divulge into true, election geekery in our conversation, I think I'm going to cut to a break. But when we come back, Jaime, what I'd like to talk about is there's 13 ballot measures on the ballot this year, propositions. And you just mentioned driving the vote to the ballot. A big part is turnout. Mm-hmm. We saw low turnouts in the primaries, or at least no better than average turnouts in the primaries. And a lot of this fall will be determined by who actually shows up and votes. So I'd like to get into how those ballot propositions may play into that when we get back on the other side. So I appreciate you being with me today. And that's Jaime Melero with Melero Alvarez. And full disclosure, he is one of our legislative lobbyists for Southern Arizona Leadership Council. And we appreciate all the work you do for us and for the state. So we'll be right back with Jaime Melero. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson. You're listening to the Engagement Hour. And Matt, real quick, that commercial that just ran with Bear Down in the background, says yes. It's almost football time. It's almost football time. So
week after Saturday, Ted.
And I want to encourage a lot of folks. There's a lot of people that won't be around over Labor Day weekend. And we've got that New Mexico coming into play, Arizona. So I'd encourage everybody. It's a great opportunity to go out and see a game. I don't know if they've set the time, but I'm sure it's going to be the evening, so it might be cooling down. But I strongly encourage everybody to get out there and support the Wildcats. And my guest
It's that time, Ted.
Absolutely. It is time. Get ready. And my guest today for this half hour is Jaime Melero with Melero Alvarez up in the Phoenix area, and our expert on everything state legislature and political wise in throughout the state. And Jaime, I'm pretty sure you're a U of A grad, correct?
Oh, no. I went to the Harvard of the West, Ted. I went to Arizona State.
Oh, there we go. had to get that one out for you. So, Jaime, I'd like to talk a little bit now. We talked about in the first segment the role that the local elections, even for national concerns, help drive the turnout for the vote. They want to get people excited about voting in their district, because therefore they're going to fill out the rest of the 3-page ballot we're going to have in Maricopa. So
correct.
13 propositions currently are looking like they're going to make the ballot. There's a couple court cases out there. The minimum wage effort, One Fair Wage, has pulled out, saying they aren't going to continue to argue that they have enough signatures. It wasn't looking good there. Can you talk a little bit real quickly on how many of these 13 do you actually believe are going to be on the ballot? And if there's a case going on in the courts right now, explain why you don't think it will get through.
Well, trying to guess what the Supreme Court's going to do is, in my opinion, I've learned it's a coin flip. Because you are absolutely convinced that this or that particular initiative is not going to get on the ballot. Next thing you know, it is. And then another one all of a sudden surprises you that it gets thrown out. So I've learned to try and not guess. But certainly there are a couple of very big initiatives that right now are going to go to the Supreme Court. For instance, the Arizona Abortion Access. I think that's going to be Proposition 139.
That's correct.
That would allow for protected abortions across the state. You know, that was a major issue this year at the state legislature. I think the Democratic Party views that particular initiative as a very important one, because when you look at the polling data, if the attention is on access to abortion issues, that tends to favor Democrats. In our state, every poll that I've seen, whether you agree with it or not, I'm just saying from just a political standpoint, that a lot of the Arizonans tend to say, yeah, we should have an opportunity and women should have that right and have that choice. Conversely, the Republicans would much rather focus on issues that would favor what they're talking about. And in this case, I think issues are the economy, but certainly border security. And border security which is the reason why the state legislature put Proposition 314 on the ballot that was put in place that really heightens border security, which would make a state offense for people that were crossing the border illegally. It deals with fentanyl issues and all those kinds of things that I think from a voter outreach and trying to get attention to those particular issues. Republicans are focusing on border security. Democrats are focusing on choice for women.
I believe that is absolutely going to drive a lot of the vote. Now, you said abortion access still is probably going to end up in the Supreme Court. Is it looking at the case to bring it off the ballot, or is it just about the language that's been used in the pamphlet?
Well, the opponents of it are trying to knock it off, of course. They're saying that the ballot language, or excuse me, the petition language
that's right,
was given to folks to say, look, here's what this measure does. We'd like for you to sign this petition so that it can get on the ballot. The opponents are saying that language was not accurate. And under Arizona law, you have to have a very accurate description of what that initiative would actually do in order for it to qualify for the ballot and for the Arizona citizens to have the opportunity to vote on that. And so that's the argument, that they didn't present it in a way that accurately reflects. Of course, the proponents are saying, yes, it does. They're trying to parse the verbiage, but that's why it's going to the Supreme Court for ultimate decision.
And we've seen a lot of the citizens' initiatives, for sure, that are going to the Supreme Court, but also several of the legislative referrals have also gone to the Supreme Court regarding the language.
Correct.
And my gut's telling me all these will be on the ballot come November, just because I don't know if the Supreme Court wants to get into wordsmithing what's said on the ballot as much. We know that signature gatherers, and watching this over time, it's about a 2-minute conversation or less on whether you're getting a signature or not. So some of the processes that are put in place just aren't the reality of how signatures are gathered on the street.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I would agree with you that the Supreme Court tends to be very cautious about throwing out initiatives because ultimately it's the voters that should have the opportunity to decide whether or not they want it. However, I have seen and been a part of efforts that have knocked initiatives off the ballot for what I would call false advertisement, of saying that this is what we purport to do or want to do, but it really doesn't reflect what that particular law would actually entail. And the one thing I think that the Supreme Court, and I would argue that we should have very high standards, is because in Arizona, as we all know, once the voters vote in a particular law, it is very difficult, if not impossible, to change. And that's why I think the standard needs to be very high.
Fully agree with you on that. The biggest challenge we have with citizens' initiatives for anything sent to the ballot is exactly what you just said. Even the legislature, it's very difficult for them to curtail or change any of the language that was in the initiative as voted on by the citizens. And the only way you can change it is to go back. And take it to the citizens. And we've talked about, you've already talked about the amount of money you're going to be pouring in for campaigns this year. What do you see as far as the amount of money? Do you think those three initiatives will be the one that will get all the airspace and the other 10 will just have to hope for word of mouth or that people like what's written on the ballot right. language?
Well, all these initiatives have interest groups that are behind it. For instance, there's a Proposition 138 that allows employers to pay below the minimum wage for tip workers. Well, that's being put forward by the Arizona Restaurant Association because they think it makes it more competitive if they're able to have a better process on how these people get paid. So you always have advocates and interest groups that are going to be behind it. But on some of these, like the border issue, I think that that's going to get a lot of money from because of what we talked about earlier, from national Republican organizations. That tends to help Republican candidates. If people are going to vote for that initiative, the likelihood of them voting for other Republicans is probably higher, right? And then conversely, with Proposition 139, the Arizona abortion access, it's the same thing with the Democrats. Democrats are probably going to be putting a lot of money into that initiative. not so much for, you know, giving women in Arizona the choice, but also to drive Democrats out to vote. So there's a lot of politics that goes behind the scenes with these initiatives that that feed into the bigger picture of presidential races and, of course, U.S. Senate races and congressional races. Right now, as we all know, there's a big fight for the Republicans to try and take over the Congress, and the Democrats are trying to keep it. So that's why all of these become so important.
Yeah, there's no doubt it. Every campaign is going to drive people out to vote. Every ballot proposition could drive people to vote. And some of the old get out the vote where you go door to door, it still exists. A lot of people do it. But so much of it now is being fought through the both the television advertising, but more importantly, I think, on social media. So how have you seen that affect elections in your time monitoring all these things?
And that's it's changed drastically. In 2006, I was a part of John Kyle's effort to remain as U.S. Senator. But it's changed dramatically over the years, Ted, I would agree.
Well, Jaime, I always appreciate both your counsel and your insight and advice. I appreciate you taking the time to join us. That was Jaime Melero with Melero Alvarez, our trusted input on when it comes to things election-oriented, and I hope to have you back soon.
Thank you, Ted. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Thank you.
And go Devils.
We'll leave that one to the side. So strongly encourage everybody that's listening to tune in tomorrow for Jump in Tucson with Grant Kruger. You've been listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have a great day.